powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now. We're 2 hours away from the start of round two, and no, the Seattle Seahawks do not have a pick. Right now, at least. Obviously, there's room for movement there. They are on the clock in round three at pick number 81. Wide receiver Tyler Lockett expected to announce that pick for Seattle. That'll be fun to see. We'll see if it actually sticks with 81, though. Joining us now, ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson from Seahawks headquarters. Brady, is the spread out yet? How's it looking over at headquarters right now?
I haven't even gone into the cafeteria yet, but I can tell you that I have a new pair of pants on today. I don't have the massive stain on my pant leg that I did yesterday. So no stains, plenty of draft information and some ideas and some thoughts on what happened in round one. And yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
All right. Well, let's get started with the surprise that I had that they actually stayed at pick number 16. Now, before the draft started, I asked you, do you think that there's a real chance they trade out of 16? And you said, yeah, I absolutely do. We've seen them do it before. They don't have a second rounder. The temptation is there. How do you think, if at all, the run on offensive players to start things might have influenced them to stay?
Yeah, no, that was part of it. And we heard from John Schneider afterwards that he said that they had four different trade offers that they were considering there. I think they did not expect, and we heard that plainly from John Schneider, they did not expect Byron Murphy to be available there. So I think it was the combination of having their top-ranked defensive player still on the board at 16 and just not getting a good enough offer to move back. Now, I do think... this is my theory, Stacy, on who was involved in potentially trying to trade up. My theory is that it was the Jaguars, Rams, Bills, and Eagles. And obviously there was a ton of speculation before the draft that Philadelphia was looking to trade up. Mm-hmm. I think they were one of the four teams. And I think that two of those teams, the Jags and the Rams, were interested in moving up for Byron Murphy specifically. And so I don't think the Seahawks wanted to lose out on their guy, knowing that if they traded back, one of those two teams might have taken him. And I also just don't know if the offers were good enough. Look at the trade that was made right after Seattle picked Byron Murphy. It was Jacksonville moving back six spots with Minnesota, and they got, I think, what was it, like a fourth this year and then a third and a fourth next year. So not even a day two pick, you know, certainly not a second round pick, but not even a third round pick this year. And I think if they were going to move back, that's probably what they were looking to get is at least one more day two pick today.
Let's talk about what they did actually get. You also said yesterday, look, this is a meat and potatoes type draft. By that, you meant they need to, with a brand new head coach, start with the basics, go back to fundamentals, and address the trenches. We just so happened to assume that the trenches would mean the other side of the line of scrimmage with the offensive line. Trey Fautanu was available, ends up going a few picks later to the Steelers. Instead, they went with Byron Murphy. How do you like Murphy as a prospect, as a fit for Seattle? And it sure sounds like you aren't convinced, based on what you're thinking about those trades, that he would have lasted quite as long.
Yeah, that's my theory, is that he would not have lasted very long. We heard from Josh Schneider, he was their top-ranked defensive player. I wondered, I did not, obviously didn't know that ahead of time, otherwise I would have given him a lot more thought to putting him to Seattle in my mock draft. I wondered just about, if the size was a fit for what this defense wants, just knowing that, you know, Mike McDonald had some pretty big defensive tackles in Baltimore. You know, the flip side of that is he also had Justin Madubuike, who, you know, was an all-pro guy who got paid a ton of money this offseason, who was built, you know, more like a traditional three technique. And Byron Murphy is closer to that type of build. And so at the end of the day, you know, whether or not you want massive guys in there, you can still find a place in any sort of scheme for a guy who is as talented as Byron Murphy is. And so it sounds like he's got some position versatility, but he's mainly going to be, you know, an inside guy. So a defensive tackle, whether it's three technique or nose, as opposed to, you know, somebody who plays defensive end. And so, yeah, I think it's a home run pick. And, you know, in an ideal world, you know, could you have traded back and addressed either, you know, offensive line or defensive tackle, or just offensive line or defensive line? I think in an ideal world, that would have been the scenario where you trade back a few spots, pick up another pick today on day two, and still address the trenches. But I don't know if that trade was available, and I don't know if they felt like a player they really liked would have still been available in one of those trade down scenarios.
You were one of the reporters in the room interviewing John Schneider and Mike McDonald at the end of the night after round one concluded. Was there anything from those conversations that kind of lingered with you a little bit later as you started thinking about their approach to the draft, maybe what went into their decision?
You know, there was one thing I heard from Schneider, and I went back and looked and listened to the interview that he did with Wyman and Bob before the draft. And one of the things he talked about was, you know, some of the, I'm paraphrasing here, but some of the draft mistakes they've made in the past. There's been a couple instances where they took a guy where they didn't have complete buy-in from, you know, the coaching staff. Like there wasn't complete agreement from the coaching staff and the scouting department. And look, disagreements like that happen all the time between staffs. And the idea is, you know, you want to eventually get the coaching staff to buy in. And he later in the conversation, the Richard Sherman pick was brought up, and he said, you know what, thinking back on that pick, there was complete buy-in from the coaching staff. And then one thing he said after they took Byron Murphy, complete buy-in. So yeah. This is a pick that I think everybody in the organization was on board with. So it certainly doesn't sound like there's any question about how he might fit into the scheme. And again, when you've got a player that talented, you can make it work in any scheme, I think.
Let's talk about Byron Murphy. I couldn't tell if it was you in the interview with Murphy that asked him, like, hey, if there's one play that anyone could go back and watch, you know, what play would you tell people to see? I thought it was maybe you, but couldn't
tell.
That was,
yeah, that's one of my go-to questions.
And it's informative. Yep. So what did he say? Did you go back and watch it? And what stands out about him as a player?
Yeah, so he thought about it for a second, and then he pointed to a play he made versus Alabama where I believe he was lined up on the nose. A nose tackle, and then he took on a double team from the center and the guard, and you know, as is going to happen when you're taking on a double team, you know, he got knocked to the ground, so he was on all fours, immediately got back up and still powered through both of those guys to make the play, made a stop for no gain. So you just talk about like that's a pretty good example of a guy's power. You don't see too many 300-pound defensive tackles playing on the nose. That's typically a spot for a much bigger guy, knowing that you're going to take on a lot of double teams that way. And so, but yeah, he had the power, he had the relentlessness to still, you know, stay after the play and then to ultimately make the play in the backfield. And so, you know, you might hear more people talk about Murphy as just a pass rusher because, you know, he led the nation last season in pressure rate among defensive tackles. He had the 5 sacks, which is pretty good. You know, it's pretty good production from a defensive tackle, but this guy can get it done against the run too. And as we all know, we've all watched the Seahawks the last 2 seasons. There has not been a worse run defense in the NFL last season than Seattle's. And so, you know, purely Stacy from like just a numbers standpoint, I don't think this was a huge need. I mean, they've got a lot of guys there, including, you know, a couple guys they spent draft picks on last year in Cameron Young and Mike Morris. Morris obviously missed his rookie season with a shoulder injury. So it's not like they were hurting for just numbers there, but I think they really needed another difference maker against the run and just against in general. Mm-hmm. And this is what this guy has the potential to be.
I will say you're seeing this defense be built up. And I know that being a first round pick doesn't always mean you're a great player. Any single person right now, when I say that, can automatically think of 2 or 3 busts right away from the first round, including from their own team. But seeing number 5, Devin Witherspoon, number 16, Byron Murphy, I mean, starting to build up kind of blue chip talent on this defense must feel so exciting for Mike McDonald. Last question about Murphy and the defense before I move on to some other needs today and some other stories from the draft, Brady. But I wanted to look at that defensive line. You mentioned, look, it wasn't an imminent need. It was not an immediate hole that they needed to fill. They've got other guys. Is this now a group with really nice depth? Who might be missing out on time? I'm confused about, or curious rather, as to how Murphy is kind of fitting in with the group they already have.
Yeah, I wondered about that just because, again, it's there's a lot of guys there. Now, Murphy is an interior player. I think Jaron Reed is more so a defensive tackle than he is an end. And I wonder if this means that you're going to play Draymond Jones more at end than you did at tackle. Now, remember last season, when you look at basically the middle of the season, I think it was right around week 9, which was right after Uchenna Nwosu got hurt. I mean, before that, Draymond Jones was a defensive tackle. Like the vast majority of his playing time was coming as a defensive tackle. after that, you know, when Uchenna Nwosu went down, and I think they realized that they weren't getting enough on the edge from Derek Hall and from Daryl Taylor in terms of stopping the run, you know, they moved him. Like, he was exclusively pretty much a defensive end from that point on. And so I wonder if that is maybe the plan, just knowing that you added another guy inside in addition to Jaron Reed, in addition to, you know, Jonathan Hankins, the veteran they signed to a one-year deal. Now Hankins, I think, is a little bit different from everybody else in that he's strictly going to be an early down player. He's a, you know, 32-year-old, big-bodied, 325-pound run stuffer. I don't think you're going to see him play a whole lot in passing situations, but you know, you've got three guys there at the top of that rotation in Murphy, Reed, and Hankins, and I wonder if that means you're going to see more of Leonard Williams and more of Draymond Jones playing defensive end as opposed to defensive tackle.
All right. Now, we have a lot to talk about over the next hour, Brady. We're going to talk about, hey, you know, could you see a scenario where the Seahawks trade up into the second round? We're going to talk about what they need to accomplish on days 2 and 3. That is in terms of, like, where they need the most help. That's coming up at 2:30. At 2:45, we'll take a look ahead and talk about all the options they have in terms of filling out their roster beyond the draft. That doesn't have to be specific names, which we don't know yet, but just kind of the avenues they can take and kind of what this team hopes to look like as they move towards training camp. Before we get to any of that, though, let's just talk about the draft. Brady, you were in the draft room for the media. You guys all watched the draft together, and you guys are well connected, and you're also online. You're seeing all the updates. What was the most shocking moment from the draft? Because it was chalk for the first couple picks.
It really was. Yeah, I mean, I think the first, what, 6 or 7 picks just basically went as expected. I think the surprise was that there wasn't the trade earlier mm-hmm. up for J.J. McCarthy. I think pretty much everybody and their mother predicted that that would happen inside the top 10. Of course, it didn't. But, yeah, there really wasn't a whole lot that was shocking. I was very curious as to where Leiatu Latu would go, just because, you know, talent-wise, he may be the most talented, the most polished defender in this draft, but there was, you know, obviously the big question about his neck, and he had the neck injury that forced him into medical retirement for 2 seasons at UW. And so I, for a while, have just suspected that that was not a risk that the Seahawks were going to be willing to take, just given, you know, two of the biggest named defensive players, you know, in their own history were forced to retire because of neck injuries. I think they've had some other injury issues with guys that they drafted that I just wonder have made them, I wonder if those experiences have made them a little bit gun shy, taking guys with injury question marks mm-hmm. early in the draft. And so I didn't think he was going to be a guy that they would seriously take a look at. And I think that they were probably glad that he went off the board before they picked, because I really wonder, I kind of suspect that he was not a guy they were really looking at anyways.
What was the shock like in the room with Atlanta taking Michael Penix? He's a guy that many reporters there have covered and have known, and it's kind of the pick that we've been talking about today.
Yeah, that's, yeah, sorry, I don't know why.
No.
I didn't think of that one. That was the obvious one, yeah. And look, it was not a shock, I think, to anybody that he went like in the top half of the first
sure,
round, because
sure.
anybody who's read, you know, mock drafts the last few weeks, you've seen
him
you know,
he's been climbing.
Yeah. There's been enough of that connected him to, like, you know, Oakland Raiders at 13
yeah.
or the Saints one pick later. And so wasn't a shock that he went in the first half of the first round, but I had not seen anybody other than the information goat, Adam Schefter, speculate at all that he could go as high to Atlanta as number 8. I mean, that is just shocking that you could spend $100 million guaranteed on Kirk Cousins and then still take a top 8 pick on a quarterback. And it's not, you know, it'd be one thing to do that on like a 21-year-old quarterback,
right?
But the age with Penix, he's a couple years older than your typical rookie. That makes that decision even more surprising. But when you love a guy, you love him. And you know, but that said, it's still a surprising to make those two investments on the heels of one another. Yeah, definitely did not see that coming.
Let's explore that option just a little bit more, because it allows us to kind of talk about draft philosophy and approach. But I think I've seen so many people this morning on the Mac and Jack's text line, Brady, really standing up for Michael Penix, as they should. I mean, he's a local guy. Obviously, he's going to have a huge backing with a Washington or with a Washington State audience. By that, I don't mean Wazoo. I mean here in the state. People love him. But I I think it's possible to want the best for Michael Penix, to really love him as a passer, as a person, and be confused by this pick. And for me, it was almost a scenario we were talking about with the Seahawks, which is why I bring it up, which is maybe Atlanta thinks quarterback's the most important position. We don't love next year's class. If we're going to be as good as we hope we are, we're never going to get a shot in the next couple years at a top 10 pick. Why not take our guy now? We had been wondering if the Seahawks would have a similar approach at quarterback. Obviously, they didn't. They went defense. They went with a more immediate need. But it's a philosophy and an approach that you and I had talked about. What did you think about it?
Yeah, it's so different when you're talking about doing that after paying Kirk. You're talking right. about with Atlanta's decision.
With Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, to pay Kirk Cousins as much money as they did. I mean, realistically, you're committed to Kirk Cousins, I think, for at least the next two seasons. I haven't, like, dug deep into the contract, but I would anticipate that contractually, you know, there's no real way to get out of that contract for at least the next couple seasons. And so, okay, how old is Penix right now? 23?
And he's going to turn 24 20. In May.
Hey, he's about to turn 24. So by the time he has a realistic chance to be your guy, he's 26. Like, that's not all that common. I know Brandon Whedon was drafted late in the first round, you know, a decade or so ago, and he was older because I think he had played baseball and he was like 27 when he entered the draft. But that's late first round pick, and that's one instance of, you know, that I can think of off the top of my head. This is a whole different deal when you're talking about spending a top 10 pick on a guy who may not even be a starter until he's 26 mm-hmm. years old. It's just one more element of that decision that made it very, very fascinating and very surprising, I think, to a lot of people.
I should throw out that if you guys have questions, we've got about 5 more minutes with Brady before we start talking about the needs for the Seahawks in our next segment, kind of looking ahead to what they need to do in 2 and 3. But over those 5 minutes, if you guys have questions you want to send in, 866-979-3776. While I wait for those, Brady, I wanted to quickly check in on the rest of the NFC West. Now, we know that Marvin Harrison Jr. makes the Cardinals a better team, so I'm going to go ahead and skip him. I'm instead looking at Jared Verse, who you had talked about and done some studying on, going to the Rams. And then another wide receiver, another offensive weapon for Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. What do you think about how the NFC West fared in round one?
Yeah, shout out to my colleague Sarah Barshop, who covers the Rams for ESPN. She nailed their pick in our mock draft at 19. That's not easy to do. You know, it's one thing to do that with a top 4 or 5.
Yeah,
pick,
at 19, you
did
go,
it at
Sarah.
19. So yeah, good job, Sarah. Yeah, but again, I wonder if the Rams. Again, I said this at the start of the segment. I wonder if the Rams were one of the four teams looking to trade up with the Seahawks at 16, and I wonder if Murphy was their guy. Now we heard John Schneider make something of a comparison to Aaron Donald, just in terms of like body type wise, both, you know, more of the more compactly built defensive tackles as opposed to your, you know, typical guy who's like well over 6'3" and whatnot. But you know, that's just one more reason why it might be easy to envision the Rams really being high on Murphy. But at any rate, you know, they get a really good edge player. It is the one surprise there is that, you know, Sean McVay, that the Rams have not, I think, taken a player in the first round since 2016, since Jared Goff, you know, because they've gone with the model of, you know, trying to trade for veteran players and really established star players to try to find their footing in LA. And the result was that they have not made a first round pick since 2016. So I think a lot of people expected that to be an offensive player, just knowing that they have an offensive minded head coach in Sean McVay, but they got a very good edge player in Jared Verse. And then, yeah, the situation going down in the Bay Area right now is really fascinating because there's been a lot of speculation about, you know, are they going to be able to afford another, you know, with already a very top heavy salary cap structure, like, are they going to be able to afford to pay Brandon Ayuk, or would they look to trade him? And now if you read Mike Silver, who's one of the more plugged in reporters/columnists in the entire NFL media, he's talking about now the plan could be to trade Deebo Samuel, which would be a massive move just because he is such a huge part of that team's identity and that team's personality. And so, you know, they drafted Ricky Pearsall late in the first round. He's the wide receiver from Florida. And so that just makes it all the more likely it would seem that they could move on from one of those big name receivers that they already had.
Yeah, it was fun to hear CJ Stroud react live to that pick of the 49ers, being real sad that Ricky wasn't going to the Texans. Really liked his play. I have a question here from the Mac and Jack's text line from the 360. Hey, Brady, is there any chance, I'm assuming they mean Dre Jones, gets traded? So taking a look at now maybe an excess of talent that the Seahawks have on the defensive line, any chance to you that suddenly means they have trade options?
Well, honestly, that was the first thing that came to my mind when I saw them take a defensive tackle early, just knowing that, again, they've already got some pretty good numbers there. Draymond Jones is set to make $11 million this season, and that's a pretty big salary to trade. There, you know, when you're trading a player, you're trading his contract, and so the player's got to be good enough to warrant another team, A, giving up a draft pick of any significance, but also, you know, being willing and able cap-wise to take on the contract and the salary. And I think he's got an $11 million salary this season plus some other bonus money. And so and there would be quite a bit of dead money that the Seahawks would take on if they traded him. And so to me, the more tradable, I think, player and contract would be that of Jaron Reed. Now, I have not heard anything. I just want to make it clear that this is purely me speculating and looking ahead and answering the question. But just with the fact that, and I've talked to Brock Huert about this, he made a good point that, look, there was only one defensive tackle taken in the first round this year, and it was Byron Murphy, which suggests that this is not a very good defensive tackle draft. And if that's the case, then maybe there is a need league-wide for that position, and maybe there would be another team that would be interested in Jaron Reed. Now, as a guy who's 31 years old, he's not a young guy, that may temper any sort of trade value. But to Brock's point, if that is kind of a need position around the NFL and there's more demand than there is supply, then maybe there could be some value there.
A feeling I know you can completely identify with is knowing that a guy is an older veteran and you remember covering when he was drafted, just punch in the gut.
And when the guy is 6 years younger
draft.
Than me.
Yeah, exactly.
When he's 6 years younger than me and I'm referring to him
as
an older guy.
Still to come, we've got Brady Henderson with us all hour long. He is live from Virginia Mason Athletic Center, where the Seahawks are about to start day two of the NFL draft. Round two begins at 4 p.m. They don't have a pick. Among the things we're going to talk about, could we see them trading up from the third round? It's coming up next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Michael Bumpus had to jet, but we are lucky to be joined by ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson. He is live at Seahawks headquarters, where round two is about to commence in about an hour and a half. Seahawks not on the board until round three, pick number 81. Why don't we go ahead and start there? We are going to, as part of this conversation, Brady, talk about what the Seahawks still need to accomplish on days two and three. That includes biggest positions of needs. Before we get to that, I'm wondering if the Seahawks should trade up. I know that it's hard for you as a reporter to know exactly what that would cost. So instead, I'll ask, do you think there's a world where you can see John Schneider pulling the trigger and moving back into the second round?
That world exists, yes, and I don't think it is all that far-fetched. It's not going to be easy, and so I wouldn't characterize it as likely, but yeah, I think it's entirely plausible for them. Like, if there is, let's just speak in hypotheticals here. Let's say there's an offensive lineman that they love, but they think he's not going to get past, you know, at some point in the second round. And they don't feel like there's a really good guy in the third round that could be a plug and play starter for them. So, or it could be any other position, just the guy that they love in the second round that they don't think they would be able to get at 81. So I think it would take either, trading a player and, or dipping into next year's draft and including an early round pick in next year's draft in order to make that happen, in order to get into the second round this year. So, the picks that they have right now, the next three are 81 overall in the third round. Then they got the two fourth round picks, 102 and 118. So I think even if you traded, you know, 81 and 102, that might only get you into the second round or late in the second round. But that would also mean that you still only have, two picks in the top 100 or something like that. And so I do think it would be more likely for them to include like a pick in next year's draft. You know, remember, they've got, they're projected, at least as of now, by over the cap, to get a 2025 fourth round compensatory pick and fifth round compensatory pick. So I don't know if either, you know, it might take an earlier pick in next year's draft to really get them into the second round this year. But the point being, you know, they would have the extra compensatory picks to kind of offset, you know, what they would be giving up in next year's draft, knowing that they'd have the, you know, the fourth and fifth round picks next year added to them. And so, yeah, I think it's possible. Now, if you trade a player, if you include a player in a trade, that changes the math entirely. And so I'm just talking about like straight pick for pick trades.
Right.
I think it'd be hard if you're just, you know, trading your third and either one of or both of your fourth round picks this year. I think you'd have to dip into next year's draft.
Now, I ask because one of the questions that I was sent for you in our last segment was from a listener that said, between linebacker and interior offensive lineman, which position do you prioritize as a higher need? Now, Brady, I am going to throw that question to you and have you answer it, but I know that there are prospects that we have all been researching that are going to be in that second round at both of these positions, and it's so hard to know the Seahawks aren't going to get an early shot at them.
Yeah, there are going to be good players just because look at what happened yesterday with six quarterbacks right. going in the first round. That doesn't mean that all six of those guys, like that every team had them rated as a first round guy. So, you know, John Schneider made the point at the end of the night last night that, you know, the cornerbacks who went, there was three cornerbacks who went in the 20s. And he said those guys are good enough in a typical draft to be taken in the middle of the round as opposed to late in the round. And so if that happened with the cornerbacks, it's probably happening with other players and other positions in the second round. So, yeah, to your point, there are going to be some very good players available in the second round who in a given draft might have already been gone by this point. Now, the first question that you asked in terms of what is the biggest need that they should prioritize, I would say that those are two separate questions right now. And what is the biggest need and what should they prioritize? So you mentioned linebacker. I think that is a that's definitely a need long term and a need, I think, for depth. Certainly right now when you look at, yeah, they've got Jerome Baker and Tyrell Dodson both on 1 year deals. There's really not a whole lot of proven depth behind them. But the way I look at that is that both of those guys are, yeah, they're on 1 year deals, but these aren't 1 year minimum salary deals for like a couple million dollars. I mean, Dotson's making, I think, $4+ million. And I believe Baker, I don't have the contracts in front of me, but Baker's making more than that. So those are not like your, you know, you sign a veteran to a minimum salary deal and he's a draft hedge right. to where you know, start him.
It's a flyer.
If you don't
on someone.
Get a guy that you like in the draft. Yeah. Like those are more so starting level contracts. And so, but I think the question is this team going to draft today and for the rest of the draft, like purely based on need? I don't think so. I just kind of get the sense that this team has learned some lessons over the years to where when you are drafting purely for need, that's when you get in trouble. That's what happened in 2019. They did not have a first round grade on LJ Collier when they took him, you know, what was that, 29th overall, but they had a massive need on the edge after trading Frank Clark a couple days before the draft. And so, you know, they were in a spot where they felt like there was a huge drop off from Collier to the next guy that they would be able to take with their next pick. And so, and maybe they didn't have a great trade down opportunity at that spot. And so they took him and we all know how that worked out. Go back to last season. Again, was cornerback a big need for this team? I would say no. That was a best player available situation. So certainly need is going to factor in to some degree to your draft pick, your draft decisions. But I just wouldn't assume that because they badly need a right guard today, I would not assume that, you know, that's going to be their pick or that they're going to aggressively move to try to fill that spot. I still think they could trade into the second round. And I still think that if there is a guy that they really like at 81 – and if he's a guard, they're totally going to pull the trigger on that. But this is a team that, you know, I think has learned some lessons over the years that drafting purely for need is going to get you in trouble.
God, funny to see some of these 2019 picks, too. Deebo Samuel went not long after LJ Collier. Thankfully, they were able to get DK Metcalf, the Seahawks were. So they still got their quarterback coming out of there. But you had Josh Jacobs and Montez Sweat going not long before him. Obviously, A.J. Brown, a couple good wide receivers in there. And then Max Crosby. I forgot how late he went as a fourth rounder. All right. Well, let's talk about just what they need to accomplish then. So, Brady, if you're applying that philosophy, rather than, okay, what they need to accomplish is they need to leave with a guard and a tight end. Well, then how would you answer the question of what do they need to accomplish on days 2 and 3?
Yeah, I'm sort of going to speak kind of both sides of my mouth here.
For sure. Go for it.
It's like what you said yesterday. I mean, the goal always has to be add talent and add is the best talent you can, even if it doesn't necessarily fill your biggest need. Now, if they don't take a guard today, that would be somewhat concerning because now you're talking about relying on most likely relying on a day 3 guy to come in and start right away. I know they've got some level of confidence in some of their in-house options. They signed Tremaine Ankrum Jr. to a 1-year deal. They've got, you know, Anthony Bradford, who obviously started 10 games last season, but none of those guys to me look like guys who would step in and be part of like a really good offensive line. That would not be an ideal situation mm-hmm. if either one of those guys started. And so if you don't get a guy today, then you're probably looking at the veteran market. And one thing we hear John Schneider talk about constantly is that, you know, the acquisition business is a year-round deal. And so if they don't get a guy today, they would certainly be in the market for a veteran guy who may get cut later in the offseason, something like that, guy who may get waived, you know, close to the start of the season. But certainly they would have to do something beyond just taking a guy, you know, in round 4 and hoping that a day 3 guy can be a plug and play starter, because that's a lot easier said than done. That's not all that realistic to expect that to happen and to get like a good quality starter there.
All right. Maybe another way to ask this question is to talk about what they need to do to close that gap between them and San Francisco. It's a question we've been asking ourselves many an offseason so far. You got the new head coach. You've got new assistant coaches. You've got your organization as a whole trying to hit the refresh button and see what that does. Now you're looking at the talent that you can add. So we'll kind of move this conversation forward, talk about where some of those holes on the roster are, the options beyond the draft that they have to address them, and then where this team really needs to go before they hit training camp. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Just great quotes from Roma Dunze coming out of his first few interviews in Chicago. What a funny guy. Wishing him the best, as well as Michael Penix, now off to Atlanta. All right, let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks, though, the players that are actually here in Seattle. Best of luck to Washington's former veterans, now on the road to their new teams. Seattle took Byron Murphy to shore up their defensive line at pick number 16 overall. What do they still need to do in days 2 and 3? And how about moving forward? We'll talk about where this team is as a whole. Brady Henderson, who covers the Seahawks for ESPN, is live from Seahawks headquarters, where he, in just over an hour, is about to cover rounds 2 and 3 of the NFL draft. Seattle on the board at pick number 81. Tyler Lockett will announce that selection. Brady, we talked about some of the biggest needs for this team. You mentioned interior offensive line, inside linebacker in terms of short-term depth and long-term starters potentially.
Yep.
When you look at this team as a whole, are those things that kind of help them close the gap? I mean, how do you look at them as utilizing the draft and then utilizing, you know, the next couple days in terms of free agency or whatever to try to push forward with this new regime and try to close that gap between San Francisco? What are some moves that for you would be, hey, this is a step, this is a good step?
Yeah, I think there's a good differentiation to make there, which you just did, which is that, you know, what moves are going to help you fill out a starting lineup mm-hmm. right now? And then what moves are going to help you really close the gap between yourself and San Francisco? And you know, maybe that gap isn't as big as it is with the Rams, but that's still a team that's largely had your number the last few seasons. And right. Arizona is on the come, I would say, with bunch of young talent there, even with the, you know, some question marks there. So look, if you're drafting for need this year and you let's say you take an offensive lineman in the third round that you have a fourth round grade on, then yeah, that's gonna maybe make you feel better about like the starting lineup that you put out week one of next season, but that's not gonna do you as much good in terms of closing that gap that it would if you just take a what you think is a guy who's got a chance to be an impact player, even if it's at a spot that isn't as big of a need for you. And so I think there's two different questions to ask in that sense. And so in terms of who could be like a difference maker, and look, maybe there is like a best of both worlds scenario there where a guy falls to you who, you know, you had a really high grade on and he happens to also play like a need spot. And I mean, you know, there's guys I've written about before going back several weeks ago, like Cooper Beebe, the guard from Kansas State, who I think is a really good player. I don't know exactly how they feel about him, but I think he's a good player who would obviously fill a pretty significant need at right guard. Now, the question is he going to be available at 81? I kind of think he's going to go in the second round, and so that would have to be a trade-up scenario. But, yeah, I think you've got to look at it as finding the best players on day one and day two of the draft. Think about that more so in terms of more so than filling needs. And ideally, yeah, those two situations come together.
You know, I know that we have brought you on for a draft show, but it feels like this conversation, Brady, naturally goes to development of the players you already have, too, right? I mean, you start looking at making the most of your draft classes. Well, years two, three, and four really matter for those guys. So I would assume that you start to look at Devin and you start to look at Reek Wollin and a few other guys. Which of those do you look at development, and which guys in particular is being key for McDonald's tenure?
Yeah, I mean, Witherspoon is already a fascinating player just because he's a versatile piece and he had a really good rookie season. But he even said it when we talked to him a week or so ago that, you know, the coaching staff has been reminding him that, yeah, as good a season as he had, it can be better. And I'm very curious to see how they use him.
Yeah.
We may have talked about this yesterday. I can't remember. But as we all know, I mean, we watched the way Pete Carroll deployed his cornerbacks for 14 seasons in Seattle. And typically the left cornerback would play left cornerback and the right cornerback would play on the right side, and they would not flip flop those two guys. Obviously they, you know, started Witherspoon on the left side and then moved him into the slot in nickel situations. But we didn't, save for maybe a very small handful of times with like Richard Sherman over a decade ago, you know, they did not have their cornerbacks travel with certain receivers based on matchups. But I think we could see that based on what McDonald told us at the owners' meetings a couple weeks ago. I think we could see that, and that just makes Witherspoon that much more of a fascinating player. And so, you know, there's been talk about like Cooper DeJean. He generated some buzz for the Seahawks in the first round. He didn't even go in the first round, and I don't think they were ever going to take him at 16, just because they already sort of have that you know, versatile piece in the secondary in Devin Witherspoon, and I think he has a chance to be even more versatile than he was last season.
All right, let's get to a few more of these questions. You can send in some for Brady. Our last 4 minutes or so with Brady, 866-979-3776. Brady, I don't know that John Schneider has told you this personally, so you might be just going on gut here. How close does Brady think the Seahawks were in deciding between Byron Murphy and the pick that went next, Dallas Turner?
I don't know. Yeah, that's, I mean, he was a guy I talked about on the show yesterday. Is could he, you know, if he fell to the Seahawks at 16, could that be a temptation? I don't think that there was much of a decision for them. This is just my own gut between Murphy and Turner, because we heard them say like Murphy was their highest rated defensive player. I think the bigger decision there was Murphy or trade back. And, you know, depending on what those trade options look like if there wasn't one trade offer that got them, you know, a third round pick, or let alone a second round pick today, then, you know, I just don't think that was obviously they considered it, because it's not like they turned the pick in right away. But I just think if they were going to trade back from that spot, especially with Murphy still on the board, it was going to take a very good offer that probably included a second round pick today. And I get the sense that there was not that offer on the table.
We've talked about addressing need versus best available when you're early in the draft. Let's talk about after the draft. This is another question from a listener. Do you think if the Seahawks aren't able to address safety, they enter this next wave of free agency once again looking at Quandre and Jamal?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, we did hear from Mike McDonald at the owners meetings that, you know, Jamal Adams, is they have not closed the door on that. He was not asked specifically about Diggs, so we don't know exactly where they stand on that. But he did say that, you know, there has been some consideration to bring in Adams back. Now, from what I understand, just asking more and digging more into that possibility, is it's not something that they, you know, like were very strongly considering. It was more of a situation where, okay, you see what you got at the start of the offseason program, you get later into the offseason, and based on what you think of your roster and the guys you've got at safety, or really at linebacker, because if he's back, he would be as a linebacker as opposed to a safety. And if there was like an injury situation that came about, then he would be more of a consideration. But it wasn't like they were in negotiations. It wasn't anywhere right. close to happening or anything like that. But that's a good point. And, you know, going back to the conversation about linebacker, they obviously need some depth there. And again, if Jamal Adams is back, if they were to seriously consider that, it would be to bring him back as a linebacker and more of a pass rusher, edge rusher, blitzer, as opposed to a pure safety.
Great stuff from Brady Henderson of ESPN. That's no surprise. And listen, if you guys have the ESPN app or you go to ESPN.com, most of the news that you're going to read on the Seahawks page is going to be written by Brady. He's well-connected. He knows his stuff. And you guys know him well. He's been with us for the last 2 days. Make sure you're following him at X.com or Twitter, at Brady Henderson. He's going to be there live from Seahawks headquarters today. Round 2 begins at 4 p.m. Seahawks on the board in round 3 at pick number 81 overall. ESPN's Brady Henderson, kind enough to join us this hour. Thanks, Brady.
Wow, we're done already.
That was the quickest
hour I've ever done of
All you
got
to do now is hand a headset to Wyman and Bob. Thank you so much for joining us, Brady, right. And thank you to all of our guests earlier today. Wyman and Bob coming your way next.